Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, to Flushing Meadows, and to day four of the US Open. It is Pride Day at the US Open. It is Pride Night at the US Open. It is an absolutely beautiful night in New York tonight. It's just completely perfect. There's a real buzz around the place. Everything is just set completely fair, and we've had just an awesome day of tennis watching, and we're going to analyse all of it in part one. Then we're going to go and watch the night session, and we're going to analyse all of that in part two. But before that, we have some very exciting news for you. As you know, if you've been listening to our US Open podcast, the tennis podcast throughout this fortnight is brought to you in partnership with AO Travel, who operate the travel programme for the first Grand Slam of the calendar year, the Australian Open. AO Travel can take care of your flights, premium accommodation, tournament tickets, and behind-the-scenes experiences, including the all-new AO Travel Lounge, which overlooks Rod Laver Arena and Grand Slam Oval, and is exclusively available for AO Travel guests. Now, get this. To celebrate the launch of the AO Travel Lounge, one lucky Tennis Podcast listener is going to win an AO Travel premium lounge package for themselves and a friend to visit the Australian Open in style next January. The winner will receive two return economy flights to Melbourne from their nearest airport. I'm assuming nearest international airport, but who knows? Tickets to Rod Laver Arena Tennis over the middle weekend of the Australian Open for two people, and three nights accommodation at the five-star Pullman on the Park Hotel in Melbourne, as well as two-day access to the luxurious AO Travel Lounge. I have stayed myself many a time at the Pullman on the Park. It is the most well-located hotel for a tennis event in all of history. It's a walk through a delightful park away from not only the Rod Laver Arena, but also the MCG, if you fancy a bit of cricket as well. It's an incredible prize, folks, and you can enter the prize draw today by clicking the link provided in your show notes or in our newsletter. And I've said it 1,000 times, if you're not subscribed to that newsletter, what are you doing with your life? You have until Monday, the 18th of September, at 11:59 New York time to enter. Terms and conditions apply, but I think we can all agree that one lucky Tennis Podcast listener is going to win very, very big, courtesy of AO Travel. And I can, that tippy tappy sound is that of David Whittaker entering that competition. Now then, to matters New York, and I would like to start with Court 17 and a match whose latter stages we all just watched together, featuring 2016 champion Stan Wawrinka, who has become the oldest man to reach the third round of the US Open since, David?
Oh, I don't know.
You can get this.
Your man.
You can get this.
Well, usually my man is Arthur Fils, and that can't be right.
When you think US Open, who do you think of?
When you think
Stefan Edberg?
Old
Pete
man.
Pete Sampras?
No, oh, David, no, David, David.
Well. Jimmy Connors!
There we go.
Since
Jimmy,
I got there.
Since Jimmy Connors in 1991.
Is it really? That's amazing. What a privilege that was to be at.
I didn't know that stat was in the offing when we were sat there watching. I wasn't really thinking about Stan's age while we were watching it. I was thinking mostly about his backhands and just the general vibes that he creates on a court. I mean, that was the perfect court for him. Of course, he's a former champion. You could make a strong case that he merits a bigger court, but he loved it out there. It was just the perfect intersection of time of day, temperature, crowd, player, circumstance. But with apologies here to Thomas Martin Echeverri, who made it a really competitive match, and he's a lovely player, got really, just really nice technique, no huge weapons, but a nice player to watch. But he was an extra in the Stan Wawrinka show, and you couldn't not be drawn into it, could you?
Yeah, it was really special being out there. I saw that stat come up as a potential earlier in the day for John Isner, because if John Isner had got to the third round, he would have been the oldest since Jimmy Connors in 1991. But then Stan Wawrinka has nipped in there and managed to get the stat himself. And yeah, just all while I was watching that, I was thinking, Stan just still finds this all quite amusing. Like, there was a guy at the side of the court who was, I don't know whether he was coaching him or pumping him up, and Stan was having a little conversation with him at one point when he thought he'd hit an ace on match point, and the crowd started celebrating prematurely. He had a little laugh to himself, and I was like, yeah, this guy's still enjoying it. And then the post-match scenes happened, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I read that right. He's definitely still enjoying this so much.
He got a hug, didn't he?
Yeah.
That guy. The post-match scenes out there, it was total luck that we all ended up being there courtside for this. Literally on the front row, the press seats on court 17 are a dream. I've never seen anything quite like that. I loved this moment so much. It was Stan Wawrinka pulling off a moment of sort of orchestra conductor meets children's entertainer. He signed some tennis balls. He signed the match balls, as is customary on the bigger courts here, to hit into the crowd. But, I mean, talk about milking the moment in the most amazing possible way. This went on for about 5 minutes, and he was pointing to the four corners of the crowd, demanding that they make noise and giving the balls to who he deemed was making the most noise. But, you know, he was just pointing. We need to go back to Wimbledon and for this to be a video podcast for me to really truly capture this.
Yes, but we need our crowd so
a crowd so we can point. It was literally point way, and God, he milked it and loved it, and it was awesome. It was just one of those organic Grand Slam moments, and it was so special.
And I think his demeanour, his behaviour made me understand what it is that Andy Murray is doing out here all this time. Stan Wawrinka's kind of got it, and he wants the same, and he might be doing it without a metal hip, but he's an old man in tennis terms, and he doesn't need to be out there financially. He doesn't need to be out there legacy wise either. He just loves it, and he's trying to wring out every last drop of it, and I think he's realized how finite and how temporary this career is, and it's, I mean, any moment now it could end, you know, any, like, in terms of a match, or his body could give way. I mean, I always think back to when Roger Federer played Andy Murray in Scotland, and Roger Federer was totally able to move properly, and Andy Murray couldn't. And here's Andy Murray now, unable to, you know, he's out there, and Roger Federer can't play anymore. And you never know quite when your body will give way. And Stan is just making the most of it, and his body is standing up, and his technique was standing up, and he's beaten a proper player today in a Grand Slam match. I mean, that's, I think, it's a fantastic win. But you're right, Anyway, he was the look on his face, it's like, all right, Stan, I think we've done enough of this now. But he couldn't get enough of it.
Oh, I wasn't thinking, okay, Stan, we've done enough of this now. I would still be out there now if
I felt really sorry for the side of the court that didn't get a ball.
They were a bit they were substantially quieter, though.
Well, yeah, full respect to Stan. I thought he was going to even it up, but he was like, nope, you're not cheering loud enough. You are not getting a ball.
Yeah, it was. I had quite a lot of Andy Murray's words from various press conferences past ringing in my ears as we were watching Stan Wawrinka out there. I had sort of the slightly haunting sound of him saying, I know that nothing will ever replace this in my head. That's why Stan Wawrinka's still out there. That's why Andy Murray is putting his body through what he's putting it through, only to come up so incredibly short as he did today against Grigor Dimitrov. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But there, it's both a joyous thing that they're still out there rinsing everything they possibly can from their careers with absolutely no promise of it meaning anything other than moments like that we just saw from Stan. Andy Murray hasn't really had any of those moments this tournament, but he's had them this year for sure. But there's something quite tragic about it as well, isn't there? In the long run, they're doing it because sooner rather than later, they won't be able to replicate that. There won't be anything to replace it in their lives. So Andy Murray then.
Well, I was just going to say, Stan Wawrinka versus Jannik Sinner in the next round. Like, that's sign me up.
Delicious prospect.
I think Wawrinka could have won that match in straight sets today against Echeverry. He got tight, really tight, in the second set tiebreak, and that allowed Echeverry to win it. But I still think it's important that Wawrinka didn't get dragged into a like really colossal five-set match before he goes up against Sinner. He needs all the diesel in that tank to be able to take on Sinner, who has looked very good through two rounds. You know, remember at Wimbledon we talked about how he had an easy draw at Wimbledon, Jannik Sinner. But there were still some matches before he played Djokovic where he dropped sets. You know, I remember him losing a set to Galan and Safiulin and just a few. And here he's played actually tougher opponents. He's played Sonego and Hanfman, who, ranking-wise, are probably some of the tougher non-seeds that you could get, and he's just dismissed them. And I'm just interested whether, because, you know, Stan Wawrinka's been and done it at Slams and Sinner hasn't yet, and whether Wawrinka can bring that experience to bear will be fascinating. But I feel like Wawrinka does need time on the ball to set up those big strokes, and he had that a bit against Echeverry, and Sinner I think will be able to rush him and take the ball earlier. So it's a fascinating match from so many different perspectives, and yeah, I think it's going to be a hell of a watch in a couple of days' time.
I'm interested in whether Sinner can withstand the force of personality of Stan Wawrinka, because you know, that's not Jannik Sinner's vibe, is it? I know once or twice in Italy we've seen him conduct the crowd a little bit, but
he's going to be the straight man out there, isn't he?
He's going to be the straight man, and that's going to be the Stan Wawrinka show. But equally, for it to be the Stan Wawrinka show, the tennis needs to be there.
He needs to get it close at least, doesn't he?
Yeah. But if it is close, then Wawrinka can bring his force to bear, I think.
Yeah.
Fascinating. I just hope those early stages are close. I think they need to be for that to be the occasion that we think it could be. So Andy Murray then, it was an uncomfortable watch, quite frankly, for anybody that's remotely invested in the dregs of Andy Murray's career. He was so lacklustre today, did not look at the races at all, was unable to put Grigor Dimitrov under any pressure at all. And that's the play with Dimitrov, right? We've all seen him in practice looking like the best player in the world. Still, he has to feel under pressure in a match, and I just don't think he really did at any point today.
That's right.
In Andy Murray's words, I didn't serve very well and I didn't return very well. You're onto a loser there,
Dimitrov was brilliant today, but you're right, the reason he was brilliant is because he was allowed to be practice court Grigor, and part of that, I think, is because he knows what he's getting with Andy Murray, and he knows he's not getting what he had maybe 7 years ago from Andy Murray. I mean, that's the last time they played each other. And I remember them playing a match here best part of 10 years ago, and Murray absolutely crunching Dimitrov back then, you know, and it was hyped up to the hilt, was a non-event. And this was him in his comfort zone. I think he's been very well coached by Danny Valverde and Jamie Delgado to use that backhand slice as an absorber and a way to just diffuse rallies. And it's so hard to kind of put him away unless you've got a killer shot. And Andy Murray has never had a killer shot like that. He's always been somebody who grinds people down or works them out in a way. And he was saying in his press conference about how, you know, my winner count wouldn't be high against a backhand slice, but you're trying to put pressure on. And Grigor's played too well with that slice and too well with his movement to absorb it all and then turn it around on him. And Murray just wasn't playing well enough for that. And it was, you know, thinking back to like Grigor's next opponent, Alexander Zverev, who's beaten him twice this year. He was in Dimitrov's head before they even got to the court, and he couldn't play for 20 minutes. That just wasn't the case today.
Matt and I both went to Andy Murray's press conference. You had a one-on-one with him after the press conference for BBC Radio. I'm interested in everybody's independent impressions of how they found Andy Murray, because I was quite surprised by how unemotional he was. It was a very pragmatic press conference from Andy Murray. He just said, I really didn't play very well. He said, look, maybe the deep runs that I thought I might be capable of at slams, they might not be there, which was an interesting and revealing line. But he also talked, we always talk about this ordeal that he puts himself through in order to give himself the chance of moments like we just seen Wawrinka have, and potentially maybe one day a deep run at a slam. We think of that as the sacrifice for the payoff, but actually he then started to talk about, and look, it is still a sacrifice. He's got a young family. We know it's a wrench for him to have time away from home, but he also talked about how much he enjoys that sacrifice, how much he enjoys the process and feeling like he's working towards something and getting better at something. Like, it's not just about the results for him, it is also about just the purpose and the process and enjoying that. And he's not going to do it for no payoff at all. He said, if I feel like I'm going backwards in the rankings, you know, having reached the highest right now that he's been since he had the metal hip in, that then he will reassess. But I thought that was a little bit of a shift and an interesting insight. Maybe it's a shift from us rather than from him to see that process rather as the sacrifice for the reward. The process in itself is a goal. I'm so all about process, not outcome,
you
these
are.
Days, guys.
It's become your thing.
It's my thing.
Yeah, I was really braced going into that press conference, thinking we might get totally soul-searching, is it all worth it, Andy Murray. And I think the biggest takeaway that I had was the sort of interesting tennis question that I think is thrown up a lot. And Murray sort of tackled it in response to an answer from Neil McLemon about how the fact that he was really, really gutted at Wimbledon after the Tsitsipas loss, because he felt like he was playing well and he felt like there was a chance there for him to go on a run, beat a top seed and capitalise on his form. And he was devastated after Wimbledon. We heard about how it took him 3 or 4 days of his holiday still to be getting over that. But today he just didn't play well, and it seemed to me almost like that was, at the time of the press conference, it almost seemed like that was easier for him to accept. Like, I think in the past, when he played well, he used to win Grand Slams and he used to get to world number one. So now when he's playing well, it's such a reminder of what he's lost. Today was a bad day. He was flat, he was lacklustre, he was laboured. I've heard players talk a lot about how that happens more the older you get. Like, it is going to happen that he is going to put in those sorts of performances. So that was kind of my takeaway after the press conference. But I must say, after listening to David's interview with him, it did feel like there was a bit more soul-searching and questioning going on in that one-on-one that you had, David, and that idea that, is this still worth it? Is this what I want? And I think that came out more in David's one-on-one than it did in the press conference, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I actually arrived halfway through the press conference and didn't hear that line about whether the runs are behind him. And so when I got into my... I didn't really... You know, you never know quite how far to push it. And I asked him about the match and for an assessment. And then I just said, have you seen enough over the last year to still retain the belief that there is a run there, you know, and that the sort of results you want for all the effort you're putting in are on the horizon eventually? And he said, right now, probably not. And he said, at Wimbledon, I felt close. And actually, when I properly reflected on the event, I was close to potentially having a really good run there, but here, not. And he did say, he did use those words, I have to have a think about the performances I've put in and the results I've been getting and whether it's worth it, you know. And I think, and I then said, well, are you going to use the next few months to ask yourself that question and as to what you're going to do next year? And he said, well, to be honest, I'm doing that all the time now. He said, it's not like I go 6 months or 9 months and then ask myself. He says, I'm constantly talking to my wife, to my team, the rest of my family, as to whether this is the right thing to keep doing. And so I do feel like after matches like that, you can sometimes get a response that he may not have in 3 days' time. But that will have really been a gut punch for him, I think, today. And now he's got a long wait, and now he's revealed that he doesn't know whether he can get into Beijing because of the draw cut-off. He doesn't know whether he's going to play Davis Cup.
The draw cut-off is apparently 23 for Beijing. It's
and
unreal.
He was going to play Davis Cup. Now he's not sure whether he should. He
was sort of talking himself down
I don't qualify. You know, I'm not like tenable.
He was trying to take the pressure off Leon Smith, wasn't he? Yeah. Because... Last time Leon Smith picked Andy Murray, and he probably shouldn't have done, really, if you're taking sentimentality out of it. I go back to thinking about... He told us at Wimbledon that he has an end stop in mind, which I do think changes the complexion for him in terms of the sacrifice, that it's not indefinite. Mm. He can adjust that endpoint, of course, and we'll see. That's the beauty of him never having revealed the endpoint, isn't it? But yeah, it was a tough scene today for Andy Murray fans. But we always like to see Grigor do well. It's great to be able to look forward to him losing to Alexander Zverev in a third round again.
Back it up, Grigor. That's all we ask.
I mean, you just, from his perspective, you just like to see him do himself justice performance-wise. If Zverev's too good for him, fine. But that's twice.
He does.
No, he hasn't.
He played well. It's the same old story, isn't it? He played well when the pressure was off against Zverev at the French Open, as I remember.
Once he was behind.
Yeah,
once he'd gone three love down, he played
dream. That's it. We need him to be playing like that from the start. Yeah. That would be doing himself credit.
That's it. If he loses, that's different.
Vow. It was that match that pushed me over the edge with Grigor, and I vowed that I would never allow David's hype to get my hopes up again.
So. I haven't given up.
Let's wrap up a couple of other men's results from today before touching upon some women's results from the day session. Jack Draper, three sets for him against, albeit an extremely depleted, Hubert Hurkacz. 6-2, 6-4, 7-5. Hubert Hurkacz clearly wasn't well during this match. Whether it was the Lurgy that's going around, could be COVID, the the logjamming that's going around. Certainly some people around here have COVID. I don't think there's mandatory testing. Oh, in fact, I know there's not mandatory testing, but I don't know how much voluntary testing is happening. So it's really, really hard to know. But certainly that is a feature of the world right now, and certainly New York. But Hubert Hurkacz was not right. Jack Draper was incredibly impressive on the match court and in press as well.
Yeah, I didn't go to his press conference, but I commentated on some of the match, and I suppose I was impressed by all the things I've been impressed about with Jack Draper for the last couple of years, except that he's had such an injury-blighted year that we've not had a chance to see much of it. But today, seemingly unimpacted by injury. I mean, he did say after the previous match that he doesn't serve full out at the moment, that he's holding something back.
Yeah,
he
was only like 125.
Yeah, he was like, yeah. I can still do 125.
Yeah, but I mean, his game is so sturdy. If he wants to lock it down and just, you know, roll the forehand and diffuse with the backhand, he doesn't do sort of slice backhand diffusing. He does sort of bunting, you know. But he's very accurate with his depth and. A bit of a nightmare for a player who's not feeling well, like Hurkacz, who was terrible. And I mean, look, I do give him a pass if he's feeling as sick as he looked. He looked terrible all the way through it, like washed out. And I can only imagine how unpleasant that must have felt. But Jack Draper's gone through hell the last 6 months. So good luck to him. He took his advantage of the situation and he just didn't let down.
He was so interesting in press talking about what he's been through the last 6 months and how he said they've made me, he said they will eventually, it will eventually make me a better player, and it's already made me a better person. He talked about where he was in January of this year, semi-finals in Adelaide, career high ranking of 38 in the world, playing Nadal in the first round of the Australian Open. Everyone's bigging up that match. It felt like the only way was up at that moment in his life, that he was on the cusp of something. And then he was scythed down by the abdominal injury against Nadal. He had some good runs in Indian Wells and then got scythed down again during another much hyped match that he was playing against Carlos Alcaraz. And okay, he played some on clay, played the French Open, didn't he? But basically, since Australia, it's been devastation for Jack Draper. And he looks back already. The wisdom that he speaks with is quite startling, actually, for someone of his age. He said, I look back on myself in that period of time. And he said, when he came from Adelaide to the Australian Open, he said, I was so stressed about the scheduling and the fact that I didn't have enough time to prepare to play Nadal, and none of it was quite ideal circumstances for me to get the win. And he sort of looks back on it now and is like, who do you think you are, Jack? Like, 6 months on the sidelines, you'd give anything to be playing any kind of match in any kind of circumstances. And we've heard this plenty of times before, haven't we, from players who have suffered long injury layoffs. I remember Andre Rublev talking about it at a similar stage of his career. He suffered a stress fracture in his back, and quite unusually for a male player of his age, he talks about having depression during that time and it giving him a different perspective on the sport. And okay, that's not a new experience that he's describing there, but the way that he described it, I was so struck by his maturity. And I really do believe if he can just get a run of fitness together, he really does have the goods in the mind and in the game. I really do believe that. I'm not saying he's Carlos Alcaraz.
He's a top 10
player,
isn't
he? But I'm saying, yeah, he can be part of that generation.
100%.
With Sinner, yeah. And with Alcaraz and maybe Kevin Bridges. It's there for him, and I'm excited. I'm anxious as well because, you know, players whose body falls apart at this stage of their careers, especially when it's different body parts, you know, it's always a worry. But I do believe, and he plays Michael Moe for a place in the second week of the US Open. Moe having ended John Isner's career in a fifth set tiebreak earlier on today, which is very fitting, isn't it? With the help of Ben Shelton, Matt.
Yes, that was quite amusing, actually, that I noticed towards the end of that match that Ben Shelton and Chris Eubanks were courtside. You know, it was a pretty big moment, I suppose, especially for American tennis. You know, potentially the final match of John Isner's career, and he was two sets up, Isner, but it started to slip away. It felt sort of feel like this could be the end. And Michael Moe said on the court afterwards that he was really struggling to read the John Isner serve. So he asked Ben Shelton on the sideline, and then the sort of camera cut to Ben Shelton. He's had this huge grin on his face as he was sitting there in his hoodie. So yeah, Michael Moe through with a little assist for Ben Shelton there. And yeah, I mean, how everyone said it, but just incredibly fitting that John Isner's career ended with a fifth set tiebreak, first to 10. Which, as I said the other day, I feel like only exists because of John Isner. Like, I think we'd have got there eventually in tennis, but I really think he sped the process up with so many of his epics. You know, he forced sort of rule changes to happen, and yeah, it ended. He had a match point, but couldn't quite get over the line. And Michael Moe's sort of really impressive year continues. He's had quite a few good wins now this year. Hatchinov and Isner, okay, neither at their physical peak, but those are two good wins in the first two rounds of the US Open. And yeah, if Jack Draper is fit, which still to me feels like an if, you know, I still feel like you don't go from maybe not even playing the tournament a few days ago.
He said he was 70-30 on playing the tournament up until a couple of days before.
So there's got to be a chance that something goes wrong in the next round, but I just hope he can keep it together.
When he got the injury that he got in Winston-Salem, he was in tears with his physio, just thinking this is it again. But then he had the scans, he sent them back to the UK for them to be analysed, and he's anxiously waiting for the results. And the news came back that it's a tear, but it's a tear that you can maybe manage. But yeah. Right. What a situation. Note to Holger Rune, definitely get scans. Some women's results from the day's session to go through for you. Irina Sabalenka, comfortable for her against Jodie Burridge, 6-3, 6-2. Creditable account of herself from Burridge, but a class apart from Sabalenka. She plays Clara Burrell next, who knocked out Karolina Pliskova today in straight sets. Just while we're very briefly on the subject of Brits, amazing result for Katie Bolter, 5-7, 6-1, 6-4 for her against Wang Yafan, who had beaten Caroline Garcia in the opening round. She looks so solid off the ground these days, Katie Bolter. I really think the match toughness is coming, and she now plays Peyton Stearns, the NCAA champion, for a place in week two of a Grand Slam. That's massive for both those two, yeah, isn't it?
Two players who are both thinking that's a pretty good draw for a third round of Grand Slam. And Katie was talking about a match that they played in February, which was three tie breaks. I mean, extraordinary. Okay. And Stearns won it, despite, I think, Bolter having 5-4 in that final set tie break opportunity. But, you know, it is just a land of opportunity for those two players, and players like that. Mm. This is the moment they've been waiting for, and they're bringing it.
Does feel like a step made by Katie Bolter. Mm. Like, I keep hearing this line about how it's her first third round at an overseas Grand Slam, which I sort of laughed off a little bit when I heard that. But actually, that does feel significant.
It
not
is
to
different.
Just be doing it at Wimbledon, where, you know, you've got the whole crowd behind you, and you know, you may be in the draw on a wild card, and it all feels like a bit of a free hit. This is what we've been waiting for Katie Bolter to do, to develop that match toughness that you've been talking about, to grind out a couple of great wins as she's had here, and you get, you know, you maybe get rewarded by a good draw. Look, it's a tough match. Peyton Stearns absolutely took apart Towson today.
Towson's not happening.
She's not.
Yet.
Categorically not happening.
But yeah, I was very impressed with Katie Bolter today. It does seem like she's reined in her game a little bit. The great power and forehand that we've always thought of when when we've seen Katie Bolter is still there, just a little bit more consistent and under control and keeping it together. It was impressive, I thought.
Marketa Vondrosheva sailing under the radar, just how she likes it. Straight sets for her today against Martina Trevisan, Ekaterina Alexandrova next. Alina Svitolina keeps doing what she's been doing at Grand Slams. We all watched her today beat Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova 5-7, 6-4, 6-4 in the end, was it, Matt? Against the Russian. I mean, she got tight, didn't she? Several moments
she
today.
She needed
Svitolina.
Her double break.
Yeah, she needed the double break. But she is a banker these days for excitement and drama and great tennis at Grand Slam. She is absolutely compelling viewing. And I know this is just rehashing everything that we said about her at Wimbledon and the French Open, but I can't believe I'm saying that about Alina Svitolina. She is my surprise of 2023, hands down.
Yeah, I've had so many moments where I've thought, did I just not give justice to the sort of first part of Alina Svitolina's career? You know, because honestly, she was a player in the draw that I would not go out of my way to watch until she would, you know, get to the quarterfinal or semi-final, where you're watching absolutely every point of every match, and then invariably she would lose those matches, and my opinion of her was probably coloured by those. But actually, I think maybe there was more to her first part of her career than I gave her credit for, but actually this is different.
Like,
she
is
she is back as a more compelling tennis player, I think. And with everything that's happened in her life, her story is just incredibly interesting and engaging and compelling right now too. And absolutely, she's been an incredible feature of the last three slams, just watching her play so many epic matches. And this was another one. There was a great atmosphere on Armstrong. She's such a popular player, Svitolina. She gets huge support wherever she goes. And we should say that it was also a match that went off without incident in terms of the fact that there was no handshake. You know, that was something that was a big factor of Ukrainian players playing Russians at the French Open and Wimbledon. There was booing. It was called on for the WTA, for tennis, for the slams, to do something about that. And the US Open have very much done that by just putting up some messaging on the screens, I think, throughout the match. But I only noticed it when Svitolina went to serve for the match. They just said, please respect the players' decisions. And there was a sort of recognition from the two players as they came towards the net, which maybe helped as well. And absolutely no booing. Everyone understood what was happening. And the players got the appreciation that they deserved for the match that they played. And it was a big improvement from everything we've seen at Roland Garros and Wimbledon.
Such a relief when there's an easy, obvious solution to a problem and it's adopted.
Yeah, well done tennis. Yeah. Well done the US Open.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great to see. Svitolina against Pegula is a possible / likely third round match. Pegula yet to play this evening, so we won't dwell too much on that, other than to say it's a hypothetical, yes please. And I think that's probably where we should wrap up part one, because there's a lot of stuff happening that we'll need to touch upon in part two. Ons Jabeur is currently on court, Carlos Alcaraz, Sofia Kenin against Daria Kazatkina. We'll be back to wrap up all of that in part two in just a moment's time.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. And we're back, folks. We are back at Tennis Podcast Towers. ESPN is on the TV, which is more than can be said for a lot of Americans attempting to watch the US Open right now. There's been a whole drama with one of the cable providers over here, and ESPN is, we hope, temporarily been removed from a lot of households in the US, which is a quite extraordinary situation. We fortunately are not one of those households. It's on the telly in front of us. Daniil Medvedev is still going, but he is two sets to love and a break up on sensation Chris O'Connell. It's very odd seeing a sensation out of their natural habitat, isn't it? They should only exist in Australia. Yeah, not a whole lot of sensational stuff from poor old Chris O'Connell tonight. And he did have the doctor out as well, so maybe he's suffering. But Medvedev was just called the surgeon by the ESPN commentators, which, look, it's not a nickname I've heard before. I assume it's a reference to his two incredibly clinical performances thus far in the tournament. I think he's probably, assuming this third set proceeds as the rest of the match has done, he's 3-1 at the moment. His scorelines, I think, have been the most one-sided of anyone's, certainly in the men's tournament.
Yeah. I suppose it's some reference to the manner, as you say, in which he picks apart his opponents, generally speaking. But yeah, that was a new one on me, I must admit.
Yeah, not necessarily a nickname we're going to pick up and run with.
Rublev calls him the octopus, doesn't he?
Okay, that's
which
good.
Is quite good, I think.
Yeah.
Because he's all arms and legs.
Yeah, that makes more sense to me. So Medvedev still going. That's on Armstrong. Earlier on Armstrong, Daria Kazatkina fought out a three-set win over Sofia Kenin, who had added to her shoulder taping. She had monumental thigh strapping. It's a tough time for Sofia Kenin, who, like so many other players, seemingly just seems to accumulate injuries and can't get a straight run at things. We saw poor old Matteo Berrettini being wheelchaired off court earlier against Arta Rinderknecht. She was trailing in the match. It was a set down, but it was so, so tough to see. And further evidence that cursed players is a thing. Sad as that statement might be. Over on Arthur Ashe tonight, we've seen two pretty clinical performances. Carlos Alcaraz beating Lloyd Harris, and what we've just watched, which is Jessica Pegula, for the most part, barring a couple of lapses in concentration in the first set, taking apart Patricia Maria Thiege. It was forceful stuff, I thought, from Jessica Pegula tonight.
Yeah, she's so efficient, clinical, ruthless, but quietly so. She just, you don't, if you look away for a bit and mess about on your phone, suddenly she's three love up and you've not really been sure how that's happened. And I think there were a few nervy moments for her early in the match. Just she was saying after it how she's still getting used to this, you know, night session match on the biggest tennis stadium in the world, and everybody's here to watch her. It's quite new still, and but she still ended up with a very one-sided scoreline, and I think that says a lot about her, that there may not be that many frills about what she does, but she just gets the job done. And I don't see that stopping anytime soon.
Well, it's a fascinating next match that she's got, Elena Svitolina. They met just a few weeks ago in Washington. I remember watching that, and that was a real tussle. 6-4 in the third to Pegula. I think I would predict Pegula to win, but Svitolina has been so tough to beat at Slams this year that it's definitely going to be a whole different level of opponent for Pegula in this tournament. I'd be very surprised if it's not incredibly closely contested, that.
Yeah.
Because Svitolina,
it's going to be such a different match to the two that Pegula's had so far.
Exactly.
Whereas Svitolina's, she's so in the groove of battles, isn't she? That's her currency now.
Similarly strong base to her game as Pegula has. They're probably quite similar, really. And yet, both of them are looking to step up and impact an opponent now. Maybe in a way that, in Svitolina's case, I don't remember her doing in the past.
I honestly can't wait for that match. You'd think night session Saturday, although I know at the weekend for ESPN, maybe ESPN's demands are less... less significant than they were 12 hours ago. Now they're on a lot fewer TVs in the US. But I know for ESPN, day session at the weekends is actually a higher profile. It's a bigger deal than the night sessions. That's when they get their biggest viewers. So,
And I mean, actually, the day sessions this tournament really have been... maybe not necessarily the more high-profile matches, but certainly we haven't really had a great night session yet, other than Goff-Siegmund.
Goff-Siegmund was it.
And
last night, Wozniacki-Kvitova was good. But it, yeah, the matches on Ash basically have been bad.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been a fourth or fifth set in any men's matches. They've all been straight sets.
They have not been competitive matches at all. And I know it's been, you know, that can be the case in the first week of Slams, where you're putting the stars on, you go with the names, and they're the seeds, and they're playing, you know, they could be playing the world number 150. You're going to get one-sided matches, but there have been a lot of very one-sided matches, and they could do with some thrillers, really, or some vaguely dramatic matches. I'd certainly like to see that on the biggest stages. There's been plenty of good matches, but it does matter when they're on the biggest stages, because that's what most people are watching.
Yeah,
were watching until they lost ESPN.
Oh, yeah.
And if that's you, I'm so sorry. It might be resolved quickly.
It's such a bummer, isn't it? But I my theory is that if you get a dodgy first week, you get an amazing second week of these show court matches, so...
Okay.
Not much behind that.
Consider that a David Law promise.
Yeah.
Medvedev's a tricky one, isn't he? Because he's looking so good. I'm just watching him here. He's doing all the Medvedev stuff. Although he did just lose that point. Lovely serve and volley from Chris O'Connell. You know, his forehand looks good. He's hitting passing shots. He's finding angles that look completely improbable. But all due respect, he's not played anyone at all. It could be that he just runs into someone a couple of levels up and suddenly he's exposed for not being in the great form that he's not been in all summer. I just don't know.
Well, if he wins this, he would play Sebastian Baez next, who I think has won about 11 or 12 matches in a row. He won Winston-Salem last week, and that was off the back of winning Kitzbühel.
Gosh, yes.
So he's on fire at the moment. So, you know, he's not in Medvedev's league, really, in terms of what they've done in their careers, but he'd be full of confidence.
Very interesting. Because regardless of the opposition, winning does become a habit.
And he's beaten, you know, some good players in that run as well, I should say. Dominic Thiem, Borna Coric twice, Jiří Lehečka, Alexander Vukic, who's had a good summer. You know, Thomas Martin Echeverry, who we saw Stan Wawrinka beat today. You know, so that feels like Medvedev's first proper test in this tournament.
Alcaraz was good tonight. That will shock nobody. 6-3, 6-1. And then it's like he thought, oh, man, there was a retirement in my previous match and I've only lost four games in this one. People are not getting their Alcaraz money's worth. So he gave them a little tie break set for the crowd and for Lloyd Harris, who absolutely played his part in taking that to a tie break set. He was trying to Alcaraz, wasn't he? Which wasn't likely to work and didn't work, but was briefly fun. So well done.
It's a bit like when I saw a boxer in the early 90s just go out and try and knock Mike Tyson out with the first punch. And that didn't work either.
Yeah, I mean, he tried something.
He tried. There were a lot of fun rallies in this match. And then in the third set, Alcaraz was quite erratic. But didn't matter. He had a two-set lead and he still managed to win the set anyway. And yeah, I think that was probably one of the more fun night session matches that there's been so far. Albeit never really much jeopardy.
And no singing or dancing in the on-court interview afterwards. So we do, by the new standards by which we're judging things, feel a bit shortchanged by Carlos Alcaraz tonight. Please do better, Carlos. Right then, what have we got for you tomorrow? This is the schedule on day five of the US Open, of course, when singles third round matches begin. It's Arthur Ashe Stadium for Tommy Paul first up against Alejandro Davidovich for Kina. Then Wozniacki against Jennifer Brady. Night session, Elisa Mertens against Coco Gauff. Then Laszlo Zverev taking on Novak Djokovic. Over on Armstrong, we start with Karolina Muchova against Taylor Townsend. Then Iga Świątek against good friend Kai Juvan and Adrian Manarino facing Francis Tiafoe. Night session there. Going to have to double check his first name. Jakub Mensik. I knew that. Jakub Mensik. God, he's young.
He was in a junior final.
Scandalously young. How is he that young? Is he 17? If you're born 1st of September 2005, hang on, he turns 18 tomorrow.
Yes.
That's the right math, isn't it? Feel free to do an edit here, Matt. On his 18th birthday, Jakub Mensik, of whom I know much, takes on Taylor Fritz, the American ninth seed.
He was in the Australian Open junior final last year, so 2022.
Right. Okay. Well, when he would have been 16,
even younger.
Yes. Thank you. Help with maths is always welcome if anybody wants to chip in at any point.
That is
Elena Rybakina against Saranika Steyer.
That is a test. I haven't seen this guy play, but that is just the sort of match that Taylor Fritz has trouble with sometimes at these Grand Slams against people without much of a name and reputation. And he throws in a dud of a performance. He needs to not do that and just be highly efficient and professional.
Pressure's on Taylor Fritz now, because regardless of who his matches are against from here until the last eight, he should be reaching that last eight. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Wang Jin-Yu is the opposition for Anna Karolina Shmidlova on grandstand tomorrow. She's a good player, Wang Jin-Yu, but my association with her is of her being beaten love by Iga Świątek at the French Open. Look, fair enough, that can happen to anybody. But it was on the day when our mate Dave had tickets for Philippe Chatrier, and there was a love, and there had been a withdrawal, hadn't there? Basically, Dave's big dream birthday trip to Paris got rather decimated by unfortunate events on Philippe Chatrier.
Worse than that, Arthur
and
Ashe
his,
day, the
his,
other day.
His commentary on events was, can you believe Wang Jianyu had the audacity to wave to the crowd as she left the court? After losing love and love and giving us about 12 minutes of entertainment. So look, she lost love and love to Świątek. It can happen. Anyway, Anna Karenina Shmilova, the opposition for her. Ben Shelton, Aslan Karatsev, Dominic Stricker back in action against Benjamin Bonzi, Zhu Lin against Belinda Bencic. Ostapenko Pera is on court 17 tomorrow. Zhang Zhizhen against Rinki Hijikata. Borna Goyo against Yuri Vesely. Loads of doubles on tomorrow. Jessica Pegula is playing mixed doubles with Austin Krajicek. She was just talking about that on the court, wasn't she? So, fun times. This third round action gets underway tomorrow. Oh, my goodness, Chris O'Connell has broken back.
I was wondering when you'd notice that.
God, are we going to have to do part three?
He just hit a backhand list worthy backhand down the line.
Right, folks, what we're going to do here is we're going to do the usual stuff. We're going to do the shout outs. But I will promise that if Chris O'Connell does something truly sensational, we will be back afterwards. Okay. Well, we'll be back after I've told you about Willow, our lovely mascot for the US Open, about our mascots. I've got Xenia. David's is Maisie, and amazing. Matt has Darwin and Nicholas Jerry.
Yes.
Came in.
My guy.
For Matt and Darwin.
People
today.
Were sending me messages when he went one set down saying, are you worried? No. He's
you were a
this.
Bit worried. He went out to watch.
I just went out quote, to, what, to
quote,
see him get me
my
the
support.
Points.
He did look a bit anxious, Matt. You look more worried than he did.
He had it under control.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have top folks and executive producers. Should I say them in a different order this time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hannah, Drew and Jamie.
That's
it
like
sounded all wrong, didn't
that's
it?
Like when you give someone your phone number and they say it back to you in a different configuration.
Yeah.
It's like, is that right? I've no idea. You've ruined it.
That is exactly right. Jamie, Hannah and Drew, thank you very much. You're all excellent. And we have shout-outs to possibly end the show.
What does count as something sensational from here? Does he need to win?
Yeah,
if he takes
win.
It to a fifth set tiebreak, we're not coming back.
We're only coming back if he wins.
Yeah. Okay.
High standards here on the pod.
Okay. Agreed. We start the shout-outs with Chloe in Suffolk.
Right, Chloe.
Hello, Chloe. What do we know about Chloe?
But that is all we have for Chloe.
And I don't know any tennis Chloes.
Paquet.
Chloe
Paquet.
Yeah. French.
French player. And Suffolk.
Where did you both pull that out of?
Suffolk went on a very lovely family holiday in Suffolk when I was about five. And I think that might be one of my earliest, or four maybe, earliest memory, I think. It was a very hot day at a place called Framlingham Castle. There we go.
Wow.
Look, you didn't give me anything else on Chloe, so I've had to pull
something
out of
the bag.
Chloe
didn't give you anything else. Don't drag me into this.
Start criticising Chloe.
Anyway, lovely place, Suffolk. Lovely place. Thank you very much, Chloe.
We've also got Blair Patterson, who's in Manchester.
Oh, Blair.
Hello, Blair. Like Blair Henley.
Yes.
He's doing the announcements and interviews here.
We like Blair.
Yeah, we like Blair. Blair's a listener. Hello to both Blairs. And this Blair is from Manchester?
Yes. Previously had a pet mascot, Colin.
Oh.
A red fox Labrador.
Yeah, I remember Colin. You don't forget a dog called Colin.
A red fox Labrador. What would that look like? I'm trying to
picture. Is it not
that.
Fox red Labrador?
It may well be, but Blair has written Red Fox Labrador.
It's a sort of dark, rustier than golden. It's exactly as described. Red Fox Red.
Okay.
Yeah. Lovely, lovely dogs. Thank you, Blair.
Thanks, Blair.
And finally, we have Anne Fitzpatrick O'Rourke in Dublin.
Hi, Anne.
Hello, Anne.
Anne says, I won my first tennis tournament while 6 months pregnant with my daughter Amelia, who arrived in April 2023, just in time for the clay court season. The perfect little tennis buddy.
That is awesome.
And you're a legend.
I love that. Like Anne Jones.
Yes.
British player. And Anne Kyothavong.
Yeah.
And my middle name.
Hmm.
Is it Anne with an E or without an E?
It's with an E.
Same church, different pew.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Anne. They're all good Annes, though. They're all crackers. Thank you very much, Anne. Not so much thank you to Christopher O'Connell, who's just held from 1540 down. Yeah, look, we're going to go and watch the rest of...
This is unknown territory.
We're going to go and watch that. You might hear from us in a split second's time. You might not. Let's sort of hope not. But if you do, it means that something really exciting has happened. So...
Could be a classic on the way.
And if you don't, something pretty exciting may still have happened. He just hasn't won.
We've just elected not to stay on.
We've laid the ground rules.
Yeah, boundaries are important, guys.
They are.
It's 2023.
Very important.
Yeah. Right, folks. Might be back soon. Probably not. Most likely speak to you tomorrow.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.